The Great Canadian Talk Show.
It was only a couple of watts, but I brought the truth to everyone within three blocks of the west side of campus.
No way! Yes way!
And now, let's get right down to business with Marty Gold.
Welcome to the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast. This is Marty Gold. This is episode 36 of season 4. Yes, a season 5 is going to be coming up. I just haven't figured out the kickoff date for that yet. But 35 episodes into this season are most successful by far. I'll have more information. I'm still picking up some kind contributions from some listeners to round out the winter fundraising campaign. I'll come up with a final total for you folks over the course of the next 5 or 6 days. I should be able to meet with those who have asked to meet and let you know where that stands. Then we'll figure out where we're headed from there. We are looking at adding a couple of different audio products that are more specific to the kinds of topics I'm going to be talking about today in terms of City of Winnipeg and Province of Manitoba. As always, your support can be expressed by going to the donate page on actionline.ca, where every episode of the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast, as well as our articles on various subjects filed under the blog tab on the far right, all of our stuff is there, including some historic material going back to 2019 and earlier on different subjects we've covered, including the used needle epidemic in Winnipeg, etc. We've gotten pretty strong reaction already to the episode 35, where we've looked towards how mismanaged British Columbia has mismanaged their own so-called safe supply system. I didn't even touch on safe injection sites, which we know are disastrous for anybody who has a business or lives near there, of course, and that'll never go anywhere near any of the homes of any of the members of the NDP caucus that advocate for these kind of programs. We've gotten strong reaction to that episode already, so I encourage you to go to actionline.ca, look at the podcast tab, and you'll be able to look at all of the great episodes. And boy, they've been great through season 4, I can tell you that I think it's probably over half now of our top-rated episodes in terms of the top 10 have been put together since January of this year with your support, with your tips, with your insight, with your analysis, etc., etc. Will corrupt BC NDP policies be the model for Manitoba is the name of that episode 35. And here we are with episode 36. And I'm doing something that we used to do frequently, and we've done a lot less frequently over the last few years, but we're going to be changing that. You know, those of you that are longtime fans of the Great Canadian Talk Show, going back to our time on 92.9 KICK FM, and then with the TV program with Sadie Circus on Shaw TV, those of you that are veterans of this enterprise know that we frequently in the past had a representative from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation who would join us to opine about important subjects, especially the status of your wallet and how much money was flying out of your wallet and into the pocketbooks of government bureaucracies, and in fact into the pocketbooks and wallets of people who make money off of government contracts or government appointments, etc. Today we're going, it's what's old is new again. Colin Craig has moved on to far greener pastures over the past few years, and there's a new generation of Colin Craig, a former leader of Generation Screwed, who is now the CTF regional director. Gage Halbrick is joining me today for the first time. We've had a couple of conversations. Gage, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, Marty. Thanks for having me on.
I don't know how often you do podcast interviews, but I know that this is going to be the first of many because our door is going to be open to you whenever the occasion is suitable. We're going to talk about the recent budgets of the City of Winnipeg and the Province of Manitoba. I'm actually reversing the polarity. I originally thought we'd do the Manitoba budget first, but there's so much to gnaw, chew, and bite on that we're going to open up with the City of Winnipeg budget from a couple of weeks ago. And just try to touch on some high points of that. Then we'll go to the break. We'll come back, talk about the Manitoba budget. Gage, the outstanding issue that really has come up with the City of Winnipeg budget, Councillor Wyatt called it mean-spirited. The city's put itself in a position where they cut pools for working class and poor neighborhoods because they say they can't afford it. And we know that in terms of Happyland Park, $82,000, $83,000, which those residents are now trying to raise to keep the pool open over the summer. That's a rounding error for a city that is just rife with mismanagement, rife with evident corruption, poor decision making, legal departments that are forever making mistakes and getting things wrong. But somehow the kiddie pools get cut, but the property taxes, property tax increase that is brought in somehow wasn't sufficient enough to cover that kind of recreation. We've focused almost alone in the Winnipeg media on something that people talk about federally, they talk about provincially, they don't talk about in relation to the city of Winnipeg, and that's the debt load. Can you explain to my audience a little bit about how much debt the city is carrying and what that cost is to Winnipeg taxpayers?
Something that's important to notice when we're talking about cities as opposed to provinces or federal governments is that cities can't take out debt to finance their regular operating spending, as they call it. So when the province of Manitoba goes into debt, they can take out debt for anything they want. But cities are a little bit more structured in the way that they can only take out debt for capital projects or things that they call capital projects, like building new bridges, new roads, that kind of stuff. But it still can be a problem for taxpayers. So this year, the Winnipeg City said they're going to spend $51.9 million on debt and finance charges. So that's to pay for all these loans they're taking out to build things. But the problem is, over the next couple of years, we're going to see that number increase as well. So by 2027, it's going to be $60 million. And the problem with that is more and more money is used to finance debt. It means less money can be used for that straight-up spending. And then when they run out of that money, they're going to come knocking on Winnipeg taxpayer door and saying, hey, you know, our interest rates are pretty high. We're going to need you guys to pay some more property taxes. So it's not as bad as it could be right now, but every time the government takes out debt, it's taking it out to pay that back in the future, and that's going to be on your bill in that property tax in the future.
You sent me a chart, a very helpful chart, that we'll probably use to illustrate this podcast episode on ActionLine, that says that the Winnipeg's direct debt as a percentage of operating revenues is 68.1% above average when compared to other major Canadian cities. We're sort of mid-high range when I look at the chart. I see that some of these cities, the direct debt as a percentage of operating revenues, like I look at Calgary and Ottawa, though, they're around 98%, 102%. Like, I look at that, like, that's sky high. Then I see Montreal, 170% almost. But we're trending, I think the way that a certain class of bureaucrats would put it is, we're trending in the wrong direction. Debt is going up, and this high debt load is not really adequately discussed, in my opinion, by Winnipeg politicians, by Winnipeg taxpayers. They just sort of, you know, a lot of people just kind of brush it off as the cost of doing business. But that cost is getting prohibitive.
No, it definitely is. And that's the problem with turning in the wrong direction, is it doesn't seem bad now. But debt is always an issue that happens in the future. You know, there's a really good Hemingway quote where he says bankruptcy happens in two ways, gradually and then suddenly. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see the city get to that suddenly point. You know, earlier this year, the city put forward a new bond that they issued out, $200 million, to get some more debt to do some capital project they want to do. It was $200 million with an interest rate of 4.65%. So that kind of sounds like nonsense, but when you actually do the math a little bit, it means about every year they're going to have to pay out $9.3 million in more interest to the people who have bought that debt. And that becomes part of a problem because they want to use it for things like a pollution control center, a new police station, a new civic center, which are all important things for the city of Winnipeg. But the problem is that those aren't revenue-generating activities for the most part.
Right.
So the cost is going to come down to the taxpayer at some point, but they're just not doing it right now.
I can hear listeners. Their ears are burning because when it comes to the way fake construction zones are put up around the city and the aggressive ticketing by the police, a police station is a revenue generator in certain respects in the eyes of the administration that doesn't really worry about whether this is done in an honest and fair manner. Sometimes we turn into Cobb County, but that's also, you know, that kind of revenue. I agree with you. A drop in the bucket. I just want to check on a couple of details about the bond. Interest rate, that is static. That will not change during the course of the 40 years.
So as far as I know, it's going to be static because that's when they issued it. And it's going to be over that 40-year term as you mentioned. So 4.655% isn't that bad when you consider what the interest rate environment is right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, it could be much better. We're at pretty high rates as it goes. And again, but the big number is that $9.3 million every year the city's going to have to pay in interest to get this $200 million. Now,
let me ask you this. Who buys this kind of is this referred to as institutional debt?
Well,
or is it institutional buyers? I might have mixed up what I read.
Yeah, so I would say it's most likely to be institutional buyers. That's who usually buys any type of government bond. So it'd be like big investment banks, just big consumer banks as well, because obviously the government is one of the most likely people to pay their bills because they can go to you to pay their bills. So it's a really good return on investment for these banks to hold that. It's not likely that the city of Winnipeg is going to completely default over the next 40 years, because at least they'll get bailed out by somebody.
Well, they get bailed out by the province. I think it's the province that backstops the city of Winnipeg under the terms of the city of Winnipeg charter, I think.
Well, that exactly. So that makes sense. That's why these huge banks like looking at government bonds in a lot of ways, because they take them and they know they're going to get their money back, and then they can go and use the rest of their money for other types of investments that those banks like to do. So that's usually who purchases these sort of things.
Now, this debt at $9 million a year, and so the city writes a check every month, I guess, towards that, the debt. That's just on this bond issue. There's previous bond issues back when Mayor Gillingham was a mere councillor and was the finance chair and approving of these things. City liquidity has been steadily decreasing. And the other thing that's steadily decreasing is the civic trust, the public's trust in City Hall. Do you have any insight into how people can be more effective in defending their neighborhoods from the kind of petty, mean-spirited cuts to things like swimming pools, which granted are not revenue generating, but that's a kind of recreational activity that is healthy for families, that keeps young people from getting involved in meandering down back lanes and criminal and quasi-criminal activity. You know, people see millions and millions of dollars being tossed around in this city. They see lawsuits that get threatened and settled, etc. And yet they feel that they're the ones that are ultimately, they're paying a harsh price. The feeling is that the city of Winnipeg isn't empathetic to the plight that the residents are in. Do you have any insight into what people can and should be doing to stick up for themselves, to defend themselves, and to defend, I mean, I wouldn't even call it wealth, it's just their standard of living?
Well, I think the most important part is when you get together as taxpayers is to highlight that you want the government to focus on basic priorities. So that's things like you said, like swimming pools, roads, keeping the streets clean and safe, and making sure that your counselor knows that you don't want them spending millions of dollars on stuff that cities shouldn't be spending on, like travel to conferences, hiring a bunch of new bureaucrats. All of that type of stuff is stuff that it doesn't really improve a resident's quality.
Well, we saw in the city of Winnipeg, not in this budget cycle, but the counselor's ward allowances have gone up. But granted, the populations in some of the wards has vastly increased. I get that. But we saw in one instance where a city councilor paid an assistant severance. Nobody wants to talk about it at City Hall. But that individual had run for school trustee in one, so they wouldn't be eligible to work at City Hall anyways. And yet, evidently, Councillor Matt Allard paid his former assistant a healthy, an obscene amount of severance pay, as a matter of fact. And you know, that kind of went under the radar a little bit. Now, apparently, there's a cap on how much these ward assistants can be paid. But that was clearly somebody buttering somebody else's bread. And yet there was no outcry from other councillors at all, and no outcry from the Winnipeg media. But, you know, that amount, as a matter of fact, if I'm remembering correctly, I stand to be corrected. My recollection is it was about $70,000 in severance. That's damn near the money that would have kept the Happy Land Park pool open for this summer.
Well, most definitely. I mean, it's good to see that if they have moved to have to a cap, that at least a move in the right direction. But it comes back again to the drop in the bucket and the moving in the wrong direction, right? As those debt and finances charges go up, means there's less money for other stuff because the government made decisions today that's going to hurt everyone in the future. So like, as a taxpayer, you have to go to your counselor and you say, hey, we want you to do the priorities that actually help residents and all this extra stuff that you're being pushed to do by whoever it is in the case, and get back to basics. You know, keep the pool open, make the roads clean, don't spend money on all of this extra stuff.
But instead, the DEI crowd and the bike lobbyists and other kinds of influential groups that can mobilize troops for election campaigns, that in some cases that seems to be who the counselors cater to when it comes to these kinds of spending decisions.
Well, that's part of the problem is a lot of those groups are very organized, and kudos to them for doing it, for pushing their message, but it has to be done the same way. You know, local taxpayers have to organize in the same way that they do to make their voices heard as well.
A topic for another day. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about the Manitoba budget, the debt load there, and a couple of nuances in the budget. Devin Ross had a column in the Free Press that made a number of good points going into the budget that I'll bring up with Gage Halbrick of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. All that and more right after these words from our sponsors.
The Great Canadian Talk Show is brought to you by The Hive Hair Company. From classic to funky, the styles of your life are at The Hive in the heart of the Osborne Village at 175 Osborne. Call 452-4483 or online, thehivehaircompany.com.
When we take a stand, it's with you in mind.
This enterprise of Actionline.ca, standing up for communities, standing up for businesses, standing up for neighborhoods that are not consulted, that are sloughed off, that are railroaded, that is not what we support here on this program and on this platform.
Beholden to no one but you. If you would like to support expert investigative journalism that gets right down to business, check out the donate page at actionline.ca.
This episode of The Great Canadian Talk Show is sponsored by PKP Renovations and Repairs. We take pride in the neighborhoods we work in, serving the North End, West Kildonan, and the Maples Garden City area for over 20 years. Call 204-297-5446 or email us at info@pkprenovations.com. We help make sure Winnipeg has good homes for good people.
Back with part two of our interview with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation Regional Director for, I guess, Manitoba and Saskatchewan, right?
Most definitely, but talking Manitoba today.
Gage Halbrick, and glad to have him on. You'll be hearing more from him on this program as we move forward. Devin Ross, I mentioned him before the break. He's worked for governments of various stripes. Don't always agree with everything Devin says, but he's been a friend of this program. He's had some very good advice over the years, and he's very often, he has some really exceptional research skills. He's very polite in the way he puts it, but he basically said that the finance minister, Adrian Sala, was full of crap before the budget came down, because Sala told the media that the increase in the deficit, the Manitoba deficit, was because of increases in healthcare expenditures, and this is a quote, that are driven by collective bargaining-related costs, and he claimed that they were unbudgeted. That was a lie. And in fact, the NDP spotted that there was an unallocated contingencies and reserve in the previous Conservative budget and started talking about, well, we'll spend that $520 million in here and there during the campaign to try to buy votes. And it turned out that so they knew money had been set aside. And so the saying that there was no money set aside by the PCs, and that's why the deficit's so high, that was, of course, a pile of garbage. What's really going on, wrote Sala in the Free Press, was that federal transfers $195 million below budget, net income from government business enterprises, $639 million less. That's almost all because of Manitoba Hydro. When you add that up, $1.24 billion in lower than expected revenue. And Sala also going into some of the departmental expenditures, the Justice and Family Departments, Danny Fontaine, hello, are projected to be a total of $223 million over budget. another $44 million more in tax credits that were budgeted for. You add the numbers together, and all of a sudden, Manitoba is swimming in debt. Devin Ross concluding that Adrian Salo is not telling Manitobans the truth about the deficit. He's pushing a narrative contradicted by his department's own numbers. And so, Wabkinu's first budget, a wash in controversy and in tax increases. Gage, your perspectives on the recently pronounced Manitoba budget.
So the first thing that we want to say about the budget is taxpayers, something we've been pushing for a while, so we're good to see it happen, is that the premier extended its 14 cents per liter gas tax cut for an additional 3 months. We think that's super important because it's not a complicated tax change. You know, there's no special form you got to fill out to get this relief. You just drive up to the pump, your gas prices are cheaper, and you're saving money. You know, the government says you could save about $375 over the 9 months of that cut. It's a pretty good chunk of savings. And it goes even further if you drive more for work every day or you own a business that has a bunch of trucks. It helps a lot of people out that way. But then we get to the bad news. The problem here is that the government is projecting an almost $800 million deficit this year. It's a huge number. It's bigger than the last couple of budget deficits outside of the pandemic. And it means more debt for future Manitobans. But the problem associated with that debt is going to be the billions of dollars that are going to be wasted on interest payments.
And what is that interest payment amount for Manitoba?
So it's going to be about $2.3 billion this year, or $1,520 per Manitoban. That's not per taxpayer. It's per every single person in Manitoba.
Give me that number again per Manitoban.
$1,520 per Manitoban.
$1,500 in debt per Manitoban from ages 0 to 80 and more. That's astonishing. Now, one of the matters that came up in this budget is there's a lot of regressive steps. We set aside the gas tax rebate, which is really, although very welcome, including drivers like myself. It does make a difference My God, with the pipeline breaking down and other factors, if that tax break was not in place, our gas prices here, in many cases, many gas stations, would be way over $1.50 a liter, and that's before we get to the summer season where we know the prices are going to go up. But people are getting hammered left, right, and center. One of the places they're going to get hammered on is the change in the school tax credit. And I'm wondering if you can address that, where that's gone from 50% rebate to a flat $1,500.
Yes, exactly. So it's important to set the context here. Manitoba is the only province in the country that still has school divisions set specific local school property taxes instead of funding it provincially. So the old PC government was moving towards a system like the rest of the country where education will be funded provincially. Then the NDP got in and they decided that they didn't want to do that anymore. And now there's two problems with this change to the $1,500 from the 50%. So the first problem is that shortly after getting in, the new government decided that they're going to allow school divisions to hike property taxes again. And then we've seen school divisions take full advantage of that, as we would have expected. And some are raising their rates as high as 17%, as we're seeing in Morton. So if we're switching from a 50%, which is variable based on your total property tax,
right,
to a $1,500 credit, as school divisions continue to keep hiking those taxes in the future, that $1,500 credit will be less and less each year. And that means maybe you're not paying higher taxes this year, but as that goes forward, if there's no changes to that system, you could be paying higher taxes then.
So the $1,500, if it stays the same, and the school divisions, the school trustees, which is the farm club for the NDP, and that's why one of the reasons why we're in such a mess. There's no such thing as belt tightening at school divisions, but there is, again, lots of programming that's superfluous to actual education, meaningful education for our children. That $1,500 remains static. The taxes go up, and so what I'm seeing, a lot of people own homes because of the hard work, not only their own hard work, but the hard work of their parents and their grandparents here in Winnipeg and in Manitoba, where you have the transference of intergenerational wealth, largely from the post-World War II. I'm setting aside the hyper-rich and the super-rich and such things. Most people here are working class or come from the working class. And what we're seeing, in my estimation, is a clawback by the province, by the city, and by the school divisions too. They're clawing back the transference of intergenerational wealth that was earned through hard work and by saving their pennies and, you know, watching how the, you know, how they were conducting their personal affairs. Family saved and scrimped. Bob and Zeta pass away. You inherit a little bit of money. Maybe you end up actually at Bob and Zeta's house, whatever. And governments are chipping away at that. And chipping away at it increasingly from all sorts of directions. One figure that was provided in the budget, a home valued at $250,000 in Winnipeg, go find one of those nowadays, not a lot of them left, was eligible for $1,008 in rebates under the old system. They'll be better off by about $308 now with the $1,500. A home valued at $850,000 got about $2,600 on the old system. They'll only get $1,500. So they'll be paying about $1,000 more for those that are in more expensive homes. Now, you might look at it. People might look at it and go, well, listen, you can afford an $850,000 house. You can afford an extra $1,000, but it won't be an extra $1,000 every year because those school taxes are going to keep going up.
Right, and there's two problems with that, one more potential and one real. So the potential one is in the budget, they just used an average mill rate or property tax rate to calculate that. But the problem is because the school divisions can set those locally determined school taxes, it's not exactly sure how it's going to affect everyone, because if you live in Pembina school, Pembina Trails school division, you could have higher tax than someone who lives in Winnipeg.
Pembina Trails has got high, yes. No, again, that's so suburban. But, you know, there's another problem that I want to raise with you, Gage, with all of this. The NDP broke their election promise. It was right in their platform that they would keep the 50% residential education property tax rebate.
And right, they did say they were going to keep it, and it's disappointing to see that change, especially if that change in the future means higher taxes for people.
But as Tom Broadbeck wrote, far be it for even Tom, it, to some extent, you know, it's weird because he's trying to have it both ways, Tommy boy, saying that breaking election promises feeds into the cynicism many have about politics. As he wrote, why bother voting when politicians just do whatever they want once in government anyways? It's a legitimate grievance. And yet somehow the column, they managed to title the column, and he managed to try to launch an argument, NDP broke election promise and it's probably a good thing. Gage, is it your position that parties that get elected, that it's okay when they break their election promises?
Well, I think in order to be the most accountable to taxpayers that you can be, you only get to make that decision once every 4 years, and they tell you they're going to do something, they better do it. I mean, of course, from our perspective, if the government promises to do something, it turns out to be wildly expensive and hurts taxpayers, well, they shouldn't have promised that in the first place. But making a decision on that front wouldn't be the biggest deal. But especially when it comes to tax hike, if you walk up and you say, you know, we're not going to hike tax when we get in charge, and then on day one you start to do that, that's a big problem. And it, again, it contributes to that cynicism, but it also hurts taxpayers' wallet books.
Another thing that, you know, the CTF in past iterations, in terms of the people that I've interviewed, etc., we've heard pronouncements about corporate welfare. Manitoba, no different. I don't know anything about the Strategic Innovation Fund, but they got a $50 billion kitty to spread around. The another kind of what I view as corporate welfare is the electric vehicle rebate, which is just utter nonsense since we already have the strains on Manitoba Hydro and being able to provide enough power just for basic industrial and everyday residential uses. The government of Manitoba, of course, being as far to the left philosophically as any, great believers in the hypothesis of saving the planet by switching over in the coldest place on Earth to electric vehicles that have a driving range in the winter of can't get you to Brandon and back. And now they're going to start doling out $4,000 rebate checks when you buy an electric vehicle, a new one, and $2,500 for a used one. But these things depreciate to having like no value at all after like 4 years. I realize that that's ideologically driven. I see it as corporate welfare because they're trying to prop up the manufacturers of these electric vehicles.
Well, it's definitely welfare on a bunch of levels. And the main problem is, right, you see even regular everyday Manitoban who is thankful to see the government cut his 14 cents per liter gas tax because, you know, he's got an older car, it guzzles a little bit, can't afford to go buy a new one. So instead, the government's going to use his tax money to hand over $4,000 checks to people who can afford to buy a brand new electric car. That's not most people. Most people can't afford to buy a brand new car of any price. The $70,000 that a new electric car could cost you. So the government is just transferring this money from the taxpayers who can't afford it to the taxpayers who are doing well already and giving them that free money.
And although it's not in the realm of corporate welfare, I'll look at the other side, the social services side, the family's budget, way high, the justice budget for whatever reasons. Combined, those are both, I think I just said, like $220 million over budget. The flip side on the social services end of this is the allotment of millions towards a safe injection site without looking at, to any extent, at the kinds of issues, although maybe they say they're looking at you know, the kinds of problems that have come up in Alberta and British Columbia with regards to the deterioration of neighborhoods in the vicinity. One point I've made, you'll never see a politician, you'll never see an elected politician of any political stripe, but in particular the NDP, ever say that they would welcome a safe injection site next door to their home, their school, their house of worship, their playground. They all want it, but they don't want it near them. It should be foisted off. The sociological problems, policing issues that come up, security issues, should be foisted off on the backs of the taxpayers who end up getting fleeced for this. I'm just wondering, you know, your own perspectives that you may have with regards to this kind of spending, where they say, well, it has great outcomes in terms of health spending on the back end because you're not dealing with as many overdoses, et cetera, et cetera. But in the end, it just looks like it's satisfying a particular political base and not really solving the problem. And the problem is that too many people are using dangerous, highly addictive drugs that cause, you know, all sorts of bad episodes in terms of their personal behavior and outbursts. And I mean, you take a bus in Winnipeg for a week and you're going to see it firsthand, what's going on our streets. And yet the government just wants to hand out free drugs to some of these people. I don't see the sense in it.
Well, you know, it's difficult to say when they say that it'll have these dividends in the future on this spending and lower spending in other areas, because the government is really spending more on almost everything, especially in this budget. You know, compared to last year's budget, they're going to spend $1.4 billion more. So there'd be a lot of dividends from this kind of stuff to make up for that deficit.
And then the government, I just want to mention a point I should have made. The government, in a lot of cases, these are non-government organizations, and they're funding the organizations that are proponents of these programs. And so that cost gets kind of hidden away as well. But really, it's like a make-work project in a lot of cases for these groups, and they're all very ideologically driven, and they all get involved in political activities to some extent or another, that you know, it's like, you know, feeding their base while pretending that it's neutral.
Well, it's really expensive, and that's kind of our main point. Is whenever the government's spending on anything, they have to set their priorities. They say that this is the way to do it. You know, I'm not an addictions expert, so I can't say for sure. Then they have to cut back in other areas to get to that balanced budget. You know, the government has predicted in this budget they're not going to balance it until 4 years from now.
With an $18 million, that's BS, because that's not a real projection. That's a token projection to pretend they're going to be able to balance it.
Well, that's the problem, too, is that $18 million, a strong wind in Winnipeg, really more rain than you expect, could push that back into the red. So we were hoping for much more of a projected balance on that one. The government's kind of betting on not increasing spending as much next year and hoping that a bunch of revenues are going to show up. Historically, that's not usually the case for any government at all. You know, they do like to spend.
As Buddy Holly would say, that'll be the day. It's going to expend. Government's going to put out $9.6 billion on interest payments over the course of the next 4 years. For every $10 in taxes, $2 are going to interest payments on the debt. That's the situation that Manitoba finds itself in. And in the meantime, your property taxes are going to go up. Your education taxes are going to go up. The value of the tax credit is going to go nowhere. They offered a $300 tax credit. I think it's a tax credit for security systems. And I want to explain to some of our listeners, there's no details on it because it doesn't work that way. They have to draft the legislation, and then we'll know which security systems are eligible, how the rebate's supposed to work, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact is, $300, that barely buys you, a lock and key to secure your property. That's not much when you talk about the cost of security systems. And yet, look how much that saves on policing costs when you can stop break-ins, stop those thefts, stop the fencing of people's valuables, stop the break-ins at industrial sites. There's untold losses, I understand, in terms of like construction equipment and stuff that people don't want known. How many front-end loaders and things like that get stolen, and I don't know if they're being dismantled or shipped to someplace. Who knows? But you'd think that a government that wants to find ways of reducing the budget expenditures for things like policing, justice, etc., you think they'd invest more in people being proactive to protect their own security, their own safety of their property. And instead, they get a $300, drop in the bucket.
And that proactive point, I think it's a good one. We talk about that $9.6 billion number in the interest payments that the government's going to waste over the next 4 years. We talked a lot about how they want to spend on all manner of things. If you look at it this way, that $9.6 billion, if the debt was gone, budget was balanced, that $9.6 billion could pay for this year's entire health care budget with enough left over to extend that gas tax cut for 4 years. So it shows the whole point of making sure the government tries to make these good decisions as soon as possible so that extra money is not wasted and sent to big bankers who hold all these government bonds, but instead can actually be used for tax relief and important programs for the government instead of just being wasted.
It's uphill, for guys like us, so to speak. It's very uphill because you just do not have the sense of responsibility over the public dollar. And Annie Fontaine taking an entourage to the United Nations, again, for ideological purposes, Wahb Kanu defending it. She's certainly never seen a trip to New York that she wouldn't take. You've got profligate spenders, and really, the thing that gets me, just to wrap this up, when I look at Winnipeg City Council, as an example, I'm not talking about rural municipalities in this case, because I'm not as well-versed on them. Winnipeg City Council, the NDP government here in Manitoba, the number of them that have actually operated bricks and mortar businesses, the number of them that have had to actually make a payroll is a number adjacent to zero. None of them have experience in business, in revenue generation, in job creation, in product innovation. It's we're led by a political class, certainly with regards to provincial government. It's made up of union members, teachers, people from certain professions that don't really get their hands dirty, so to speak, and haven't toiled and had to sweat. They end up, they come from professions that are government funded.
No, it's difficult to understand the plight of the everyday taxpayer when your paycheck for your entire life has been coming from the government.
We will talk about the largesse of government pensions and other things another day, I'm sure. I really appreciate you coming on, talking about the City of Winnipeg and provincial budget. And as I've indicated, you're welcome here on the Great Canadian Talk Show podcast anytime. And I really appreciate it, Gage Holbrook, you taking the time today to enlighten my audience about some of the bigger numbers that they're carrying on their backs and they trudge off to work every day try to make an honest living.
Thanks for having me, Marty. It's always good to come on and talk numbers.
Yeah, I enjoy it. I don't get to do it often enough. And we'll be doing it again in the future. Folks, stay tuned. I'll be wrapping up episode 36 in just one moment after this short break.
Jamrock Security has effective and creative ways to help protect your business, your home, and your community. Jamrock gets the job done so you can rest easy. Go to jamrocksecurity.ca or call us at 204-880-1564. Do security. Do it smart. Jamrock Security.
I don't think this is a Gold Star award that Winnipeg should be proud of when you're featured in the Federal Conservatives' What Went Wrong in Canada scenarios, and Winnipeg's at the top of the class. So it's not something of a badge of honor, I think, for the current leadership at City Hall to wear.
In the tradition of asking hard-hitting questions.
Have you made the beds yet, madam?
Not that question. It's the Great Canadian Talk Show Podcast on Spotify, Apple, Player FM.
And at actionline.ca.
The home of public affairs commentary in Winnipeg.
Back to wrap up episode 36 here, the Great Canadian Talk Show Podcast. I want to again thank everybody who donated through our winter fundraising campaign. I've still got a couple of other people that have indicated that they have contributions. We're close to the target. We might go over it. I've got to certainly look at, sustainable funding ideas. We want to expand the nature of what we're providing so that you'll get three or four pieces of content a week, some shorter commentaries. There's a couple of ideas we're kicking around for Action Line. I want to make sure that you all, everybody who listens to this program, I appreciate it. I'm asking you all, share the podcast, send them around, get more people involved, gauge your engagement with the CTF there. Say, we talked about the concept of people having to be involved and watch out for their own interests and put the heat on their city councillors or their MLAs or their MPs to ensure that the true priorities of the community are being addressed. And that one of the tools is this program, exposing information that is not put forward anywhere else. Taking on sacred cows, whether it's personalities in politics, not to call them cows, but you get my point. We take on subjects, we take on iconic individuals that are above reproach and don't get questioned by the media. And I'm here to ask the hard questions. I'm here to stand up for you. I'm here to make sure that your family, that your business has a chance to succeed. And it's an uphill struggle. I've been at this for over 20 years now. I guess exactly 20 years, really, between radio and in online formats and on TV with City Circus. That was from 2012 to 2015. Some people have been along for the entire ride. I appreciate that. Those of you that are newcomers, if I sound battle-hardened, it's because I am. I've made speeches to the legislature. I've made speeches to City Hall. My name has come up with regards to investigations I conducted, even in the House of Commons when I was like 24 years old. I had a long run at this kind of stuff. I'm going to stay on it with your support. I'm trying to make sure that this is my full-time job, being your watchdog, being your voice. Every episode I end with the same phrase. You have the power. I believe in that. I know it's true. I'll keep fighting for you. Thank you for listening.
Continuing the tradition of investigative journalism in Winnipeg.
And one Winnipeg woman is reported satisfactory in hospital after lightning struck her home.
Let's get right down to business.
Actionline.ca.
All set to entertain, to inform, to serve Winnipeg.
With the Great Canadian Talk Show.
Whether it's CTV, CBC, Global, you cannot count on them for truth, and you cannot count on them to uphold the values that you have.
He's the guy who put the M in Nemo and C in controversy.
With the one and only...
Red Alex.
Manny Bazunas.
Wrong! Cliff Gardner.
That's not it.
Hunky Bill. Boyd Kozak.
That's not right.
Marty Gold.
Take a long walk off a short pier.
Thanks for listening to The Great Canadian Talk Show. If you want to email Marty, send it to tgcts1@gmail.com or follow him on Twitter @tgcts.